Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. And today, my guest is somebody that's been in the industry longer than I have. So I'm sure he's got plenty to share with us. He's a fractional SEO, a speaker, a judge, an enterprise SEO consultant, and the author of Accidental SEO Manager. Please welcome Ash Nalawala. Hi, Ash.
Hi, Mark, and hi to anyone watching this. Great to be on this podcast for the first time. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'd just like to point out that I'm not a judge in a legal sense. I'm a judge of the Australian Web Industry Awards. So my dad was a judge, but it never rubbed off on me.
Brilliant. Now, for those people watching and listening to this podcast who doesn't have a clue who you are, could you give us like a whirlwind tour of how and when you started in the industry and your journey from there to now and what you're doing now, please?
Sure. SEO is my fourth career, so I'll very briefly touch on the first three. I started life as an accountant in New Zealand, gave that a try for about 8 years. Then I moved to Australia with my wife, and I tried the Royal Australian Air Force for 8 more years. And when I got out, I got into what can be summarized as product marketing in the traditional sense. The actual job titles changed a lot, but traditional product marketing is a nice summary of it. And then at age 48, I'd just been laid off at Macromedia, where I was a great CRM manager for Asia Pacific. And I thought I'd set up a website to consult on CRM. And I did such a good job of SEO because when I learned something, I really set my heart to it, and I optimized it for the term CRM consultant. And it ranked number one for that term for maybe 10 years. I wasn't keeping count because I never worked as a CRM consultant. What happened was I was talking to an American contact of mine about SEO, and I said, look, I'm ranking number one. He wasn't in our industry. He was just a product manager in a different industry. But he recommended me to his client. And so the client gave me a little assignment in SEO. I did a good job. They were happy. And they asked me to look after their PPC. And I said, hang on, I'm a CRM consultant. I don't know this PPC stuff. And they said, oh, it's easy. Here's the login. Just try it. And, well, I tried it because I realized that the dot-com boom had gone, or the boom had busted. And so I thought, look, no one's actually buying new CRM systems. They don't need CRM consultants. So let's take any money that's coming my way. So I did PPC and SEO for this company, which is now a listed company known as Ring Central. But back then, it was a little family company with the family wives and grandparents, and everyone in the family was working there. And I'm really grateful to them because they convinced me to take up this new profession at the age of 48. So I'm one of the late bloomers in terms of age who started in SEO. And some of my peers in SEO who started with me, they were in their 20s. So they're still in their 40s, barely touching 50, and they're as experienced as I am, whereas I just reached 71 last December, and I really need to start thinking about retiring. But in between, I'll just cover what I did in my SEO journey. So I worked in an agency called Melbourne IT, which is a large domain name registrar. But within that company, they had a small SEO agency. And I was there for about 3 years or so. We had over 800 clients. And that was just good luck because as a domain registrar, it was the only company authorized to sell .com.au. So naturally, every single business in Australia had to be a customer, which made it very easy to sell them websites or SEO or anything else relating to companies. So that's how they got 800 plus customers. And it was the good old days of SEO where you had the PageRank toolbar and you had directory sites that allowed websites to pass PageRank. And you could see the PageRank passing to the clients. A homepage link to our own directory, and every client was in our directory. So they were getting a nice PR7 link to every client, and they were doing quite well. So it was a very happy period in the SEO world. Not many customers had heard of SEO, so that was one of the jobs of the salesperson to tell them why they needed SEO. And I'm talking about the 2005-2008 timeframe. By the way, if my camera is zooming in and out, I've got no control over that. That's just some feature in this camera that's called the camera man or something like that. I need to look into why the cameraman decides to zoom in and out, maybe for a bit of variety.
Don't worry about it. It's fine.
The whole purpose of that feature is that if I can walk around this room and the camera will pretend to turn, whereas physically it's a wide angle camera and just zooms in on whoever's talking. So I won't cover every company I work for, but they were all pretty big companies in Australia, the biggest banks, the biggest insurance companies. Some were multinationals. Well, several were multinationals, multiple languages. So I had a really good exposure. And one of the points that people who are not in-house people or who don't consult to large companies, they don't realize is that we don't need to do certain things that a smaller website owner might need to do. And a good example is links. These large companies sponsored sports stadiums. They were listed, therefore they were in the financial pages every day. If their CEO said something, that made TV news or newspaper news. So we got citations every day. And links every other day. So you never had to think about links and citations, except when you needed links to inside pages. Most links that you got were to the homepage because that's how people refer to these large companies. And it's easy to get homepage links. So I'll mention a funny incident that I won't name the company, but at one of these companies, we had a visit from a very senior person who wasn't in our silo. Not even sure how where he worked in the company, but He asked, "Are you guys buying any links?" And we said, "No, we don't need links." And I think that's what my boss said to. And the guy was really surprised, and he says, "Of course you need links. If you're not buying any links, you won't rank." I mean, he didn't even check that we were one of the leading brands in the country, and we were ranking quite well. But never mind, you don't argue with very senior people. The long and short of it is, he said he had the budget to let us buy some links. Okay. So I said to my boss, "Let's not argue with the man. Just take his money and we'll buy links." And we didn't buy links. What we did buy were editorials. And these were advertorials. And they were marked as advertorials. The only difference is, again, I won't mention the publisher that sold these, but it's a well-known publisher, and they gave clean links. And they have multiple outlets all over Australia, I think about 11. And so they sponsored maybe 6 articles times 11, so 66 links. So it was a good investment of money in the 5 figures, Australian dollars, but still 5 figures in pounds for your audience. And 1 month passed, 2 months passed, 6 months passed, and there was absolutely not a change to any ranking. I mean, we were ranking pretty well anyway. And I told my boss, "Look, we bought all these links, and I told you, for a large company, buying links doesn't move the dial much." So that was a learning. We never heard back from that senior manager. He didn't offer any more money. But it was a good learning experience, because you can't do this as a trial. It just lands on your lap and you learn something from it. So I say to many others who are like me, who worked in large companies, that spend your time on content rather than just buying links because you see other people buying links. Maybe if they're a brand new small business in a small town, they might benefit from getting some relevant connections from other websites. But I certainly don't advise them to go down the cheap $5 link outlet. No, don't do that. So this was the pattern of working in a large company. The other thing that you tend to do is a lot of the content is written in-house by full-time writers. My very last employer had 20 journalists because they were a car-selling platform, and they were writing car reviews every day. So there was no real question of looking up keywords and saying, "Hey, can you write an article about cheap cars?" No, that's not what they did. They just wrote about the latest cars. And again, they got links because car blogs and magazines and others would reference these latest reviews. So I've rarely found it necessary to compile big lists of keywords. It's not that I never did that, but relatively fewer times than, say, someone working for an agency who needs to do keyword research every day. If we did, we were trying to solve a very micro problem. We might have found that a certain part of the website was not getting traffic, therefore not generating business, then we would do that very focused keyword research. So I've given you this broad overview, and maybe you can drill down into some, you can ask me some questions about a specific part of it.
Wow. That's a super amazing story. I just love hearing people's journeys throughout the career. And with you saying, like, working with big brands, you know, big brands have already put all the work in that most other SEOs need to put in, you know, to get where they are. So basically, an ideal scenario is to work with the brand that everyone knows and trusts. You know, if you're working in that arena, then, you know, people are going to naturally link to you. You know, like you say, when people, you know, in the company do something or say something, go on interviews, go, and people will naturally link to it. So focusing on the whole website, technical and content side of it is literally giving people what I call things to link to, you know, and it just amazes, you know, me, because SEO is such a broad entity that people think, oh, well, we need to do X, Y, Z on every single brand, but you need to be specific. And like you said, on these enterprise businesses, it's totally different. You know, have you seen sort of a commonality with enterprise SEO over more lesser known brands?
Yeah, so something that I've written about in my first book, I've written only book one of a three-part series, but in the first one I cover hiring agencies, because medium-sized brands will engage agencies, and some very small businesses that are profitable, whether they are a professional such as an accountant or a dentist or someone, they might engage an agency. So that part is similar. What you need to do is to write down the request for quotations or request for proposals, RFP, RFQs, appropriately. And you need to write them in a way that all the applicants are going to be asked the same questions, the same criteria would apply. Therefore, it makes it fair for all the applicants. And that part has been common because I have been in slightly smaller companies. I was in a publicly listed company that had, I think, 25 people, as best as I could count. Yet it was a public company. And then I've been in companies that were, who knows, 15,000 people. I never really asked, but I sensed that because they had big buildings in four or five large Australian cities. And the other thing that is similar is project management. SEO tasks are handled like any other project task. And if you've been in any company where a lot of website development or software development is taking place, then you tend to use some kind of a tool, whether it's Trello or Monday, or in larger companies, Jira. So most of the jobs I handled were in Jira. It's very, being an Australian software, Atlassian, Jira is very common in Australia. And I come across it in America as well. So you might have Jira in the UK too. So it's really a question of good communication with other departments. And if you know the developers well, then they're more likely to listen to you. And once you explain to them why a particular task is good for the company. The company will make more money if we do this. They're more likely to listen to you. At the far extreme of this process, in the early days of the Scrum methodology, those were the days when stand-up meetings were literally in a circle. People stood in a circle and they had a little ball, and you toss the ball to the next person, and that person with the ball could speak. Things like that. Today, stand-ups are electronic. They're on Zoom. They use electronic tools to record decisions and so on. But in the early days, you used index cards to write down all the tasks. You put them on a board of some sort, a notice board. You slid those cards, you shuffled them in order of progress. That was a company where I first heard the term sales dollar. And I said, what is a sales dollar? Because I was asked the question, I can't remember the task, but it might have been changing title tags on some pages or whatever the SEO task was. And I was told that my job had been deprioritized in favor of some other feature on the website, because that feature was going to earn the company so many sales dollars. So they asked, well, how many sales dollars would we make if we did your title tags? And I was just baffled. I went to my boss and said, how do I answer this question? And he couldn't help me. So those were the bad old days. In my very last company, I think I was in one of the most fortunate situations for an SEO. The company consisted of several Scrum squads based on different silos. So I was in the silo that produced content. So this team had a Scrum Master, had a product manager. It had 4 or 5 developers. Some were app developers, some were website developers. One was a QA, one UX, and one SEO. And everyone in our squad understood the value of SEO. I never had to justify anything. In fact, they would ask me if there was any SEO implication of whatever they were building. And because there were other silos that didn't include an SEO, there's only one SEO in the whole company, but they would invite me to their meetings. So this is an ideal situation where the whole company gets SEO. And all the way from the top down, they understand the value. Therefore, they mention SEO, they mention organic traffic regularly in meetings. And it's a pleasure to just walk past someone and you hear them mentioning SEO in their conversation. You know your job's been done when others are fully aware of it. But in the early years, SEO was considered a bit of a nuisance, a time sink for some others. They would rather just get the job done without even notifying the SEO team. And then we had to discover these things after the fact. So those things can happen in large companies and in small companies. The only difference is that there are fewer layers in small companies. And that kind of brings me to my regular soapbox that you'll hear me talk about to anyone who cares to listen. And the basic premise is that the SEO function is usually too far down in the company hierarchy than is good for the business. And by that, I'll use an example of what can happen if the SEO is not aware of things that are happening in the higher levels of the company. For example, I was used to using Screaming Frog to crawl our website to explore parts of the website. And then one day I found that I'd been blocked. It didn't make sense. So upon inquiry, I found that the company had purchased some sort of a firewall tool that was brought in to stop scrapers, because the company produced a lot of content and people were stealing content and repurposing it. So they just went and bought it because they were protecting our IP. Never mind the SEO. In fact, they were probably not aware that there was an SEO crawling implication. But I did ask them, have you now stopped Google from pulling pages? And they said, no, Google is whitelisted. I thought, okay, so can you whitelist me? And they said, well, because you can come in from different IP addresses, we'll give you the secret handshake, which is a long string. As long as every request contained that string, you could crawl away to your heart's content. But I also discovered that it wasn't as simple as that. Yes, I could crawl, but only at a slow speed. They were not willing to change the parameters for crawling it, allowing me to crawl at a faster speed. So I had to live with that and say I could crawl, say, 5 million URLs in a day, but after the change, it would take me maybe 2 or 3 weeks to reach 5 million. And I was losing sort of my patience with that, but there was just nothing I could do, because at some point, someone higher up needs to decide what's more important. And so my soapbox is that the position of the SEO or the manager for SEO needs to be higher up in the hierarchy. And I call that title something like a chief webmaster. If you don't like the term webmaster, then call them a chief web success officer, because that's more easily understood. Web success spells company success, especially for an e-commerce business. And the responsibilities of this person might be wider than purely the website itself. And it's up to individual companies how they decide which functions can be done by this person. For example, changing the domain name. Sometimes marketing might decide they want a brand new domain for a campaign. Should this person have a say in that decision? Because as you know, there are SEO implications if you suddenly start creating content on a separate brand new domain. There are ways to work around these things. Or sometimes another team might decide to buy a piece of software that can only live in a subdomain. And I've come across these situations where they suddenly decide to put up a small store and the entire store is in a subdomain. And you'll understand that it's far better to have a store as a folder than as a subdomain. And the usual argument from the internal champion for that tool is, oh, the supplier said it's better that they host it on their website, therefore it has to be a subdomain. They can't put it as a folder. So then that's where the SEO comes in, and they would say, okay, implement a reverse proxy, because a reverse proxy is the technique for making a subdomain appear to be a folder on a website. And I've done that under several architectures, but not enough people in smaller companies come across this. But it's just an example of how sometimes enterprise SEO is a little different when it comes to the technicalities of implementation. So, I would love the SEO function to be placed higher in the organization. And the C-suite is the perfect spot because this person, the chief web officer or webmaster or web success officer, whatever you call them, is at those C-suite meetings and can often hear certain proposals, perhaps shut down certain conversations right on the spot, or bring them down to the SEO team to discuss and see if there were any SEO implications. So I'm pleased to say that when I wrote the first edition of my book, I'd gone through LinkedIn just to see how many people had these titles. And a year ago, I think there was only one person as had a former title of chief webmaster. I think that company might have been Colgate Palmolive in the US, but the position wasn't there anymore. It was a former title. But then this year, when I did the second edition, I thought I'd better go and check. In fact, I forget the number, but it was something like 300. So suddenly, more companies are creating these C-suite level positions for a webmaster or for an SEO. As you'd be aware, in America, they have titles like VP of SEO. And in the last few days, someone wrote an article saying that title is disappearing. So I'm not in a position to question that, but at least going by the number of titles in LinkedIn, they appear to be increasing, which is a good sign for the profession.
It is. Yeah, I've been in quite a few companies to mentor and train their in-house teams. And often one of the things I get confronted with was, well, we can't get buy-in. Nobody's listening to us. We've no seat at the table. We just, seem to be the department that never gets any resource kind of thing. And I think that things are changing because it's the way that team has to demonstrate the worth. But moving on from that, I'm really interested to get into the depths of your book, Accidental SEO Manager. Why is he accidental?
Okay, I just happen to have one within reach. It kind of looks like this. Not sure if it's going to be in focus, but doesn't matter. It's on Amazon. So I wrote this book for managers. I didn't write it for individual SEOs, which may sound strange, because the book is not about how to perform individual tasks. So it might mention why links are important, but it won't actually tell you what are the kinds of links that you must get and where to get them and how to fill out directory forms or whatever methods people are using these days. No, it doesn't go into techniques because there are many good books written for SEOs. Because I've worked in large companies, I've usually had a manager above me who was not an SEO, and they were the accidental SEO managers. They might have been what I call generic MBAs. You see a lot of them in large companies. These are middle managers who have been, say, a product manager. They've gone and done an MBA, which allows them to be promoted. And then they are put in charge of two or three departments, and sometimes up to five departments. Sometimes they're unrelated departments. Therefore, the manager that you get may have no knowledge of SEO. And I've written a book for people like that. And the series, well, there are two audiences for my three-part series. The first two are for the manager. The third book is aimed at the C-suite. That's the audience that is least likely to buy my book. So you might say, well, why am I writing a book if they aren't going to buy? Well, maybe someone might read the book, and I'm leaving it more as a legacy, perhaps as a book that an SEO might buy and gift to their manager or gift to their CEO or the chief information officer or technology officer or marketing officer, whoever sits in their C-suite. So I decided to explore this concept of accidental. And just as my own adventure in this profession was accidental, I didn't intend to start as an SEO. And you'll come across many people who never intended to be an SEO. So in a way, it reflects what we have been through. There are no university degrees in SEO that I'm aware of. At least no credible university offers. In America, you might get perhaps a subject, a unit on SEO in some of the smaller universities. But I'm sure if I went to the big Ivy League colleges there, I would not find SEO. I've spoken at one or two colleges online about SEO, but that was like a 20-minute lecture. What can you tell them in 20 minutes about SEO other than just they may remember that they heard something about our profession? So the book or the book series is really intended to explain why and well, why SEO is needed. That's perhaps a single reason why I wrote the books. And perhaps what is SEO and what are the different elements that we need to perform? What are they and why are they important? I make it very clear in the book that you need your SEO team or you need an SEO agency to do the actual work. So I'm not even trying to take any work away from those agencies. In fact, an agency could benefit by gifting the book when they join a new company. They might gift the book to their client manager and say, okay, this is what we do. And you can go through it and perhaps ask us questions if you think we're not doing something. So it's really written with that audience in mind.
Wonderful. Is it aimed at any sort of level of company, or is it just basically, you know, a book aimed at people in a managerial role that needs to understand more about how SEO benefits the company?
Yes, it's written for what I'd call a company of any size. Even if it's a three-person company where the CEO cares about SEO and they've heard about it and they may have had some experience with an agency, perhaps one of the cheaper ones that left a sour taste in their mouth. So they might be curious to understand why did SEO not work for them. And I haven't decided my second title, but I think the working title is something like, "Is Our SEO Working?" question mark. That's the title of the second book, because it's still aimed at the manager, but at this point, they read the first book, they know the how, not how to, but how SEO works and what it's about. But now they're questioning, is it actually working for us? And that could happen at any level. It tends to happen more in smaller companies, because one thing it, most large company SEOs will say to you is that their daily life is boring. Their Google graphs are horizontal. Nothing just goes up or goes down dramatically as you would think if you looked at LinkedIn graphs. No, it doesn't happen like that. Yes, we go and rush to the Search Console every day and see if anything's happened. No, nothing's happened. So large company SEOs don't panic as much as a small company owner, because they know nothing about SEO. They've had to rely on external people. Perhaps they just went for the cheapest. Maybe they went for a $5 SEO and wondered why they got nothing. In fact, things got worse, perhaps. So they're the kind of people who may be curious to know, okay, if I'm serious about SEO, what do I need to do? And what did we do wrong? And how can we fix it? Perhaps read up about agencies, how agencies work, how they're structured, what are the different types of agencies that you can engage. And perhaps you'll have a better experience the next time around when you're better informed.
Yeah. I was going to say that just listening to you there, I can see so many people that this book would benefit from, even the SEO teams themselves, to understand, you know, well, how do we need to think about things and everything like that. It's just like in my head, and all the different scenarios I've been in and everything, it's just going through all them. And, well, I haven't bought the book yet, but I am going to, because of this conversation.
Thank you.
And I, you know, and once I've read it, I will, you know, publicly announce what my own personal thoughts and how it can help and how it can help and that. But during your career, what has been your personal biggest learning curves?
Okay. I'll mention my biggest success because I learned a lot from the biggest success. I was engaged by one of Australia's top four banks. I was very fortunate that the manager that hired me was my manager at a previous company, and he was happy with my success there. And when I got laid off at the previous company, he invited me to consult at a very nice daily rate. For 3 months at a very fat figure, and then after the initial recommendations, I was asked to stay on another 6 months at a slightly lower rate. And basically, the first 3 months were the discovery process. There was no SEO in-house at that time. And so it was a blank canvas. They might have had some awareness of SEO, and there was someone in the past who had the foresight to go and register usernames in some of the social media platforms, simply reserve them, not even use them. So there was some awareness, which was good. At the end of 3 months, I delivered my audit findings and I wrote a strategy for SEO, which included hiring their initial team. So they asked me to, they were quite impressed. I forget how big the slide pack was, but it was a four-hour presentation. Now, this was a manager whom I couldn't get for a one-hour meeting. And I said, look, you've paid me a big sum of money. I need you for 4 hours. And he actually gave it to me. And different people came and went from the presentation. It wasn't like a single long presentation, it was broken down so that different groups of people could listen to their relevant parts. And he sat through the entire lot. Then his manager was also interested and in fact had funded my consultancy, he asked me to stay back to help implement. Now, I had promised them, they wanted to know what success could I promise them. So I said, well, you'll get a 10% improvement in traffic in 12 months. Because you never know what you say to someone when they ask for a percentage. I said 10%, that's a pretty safe number. You may not believe it, but I gave them a 10% improvement in 8 days after complete implementations. And then the graph just kept going up, and I gave them 100%, which is a doubling of traffic. And these are figures in the millions. Organic traffic, there was no penalty, nothing. I wasn't solving a major problem. I was just tweaking things. Doubled their traffic in 8 months. And then that engagement finished. I was still with the bank, but I'd taken some other contracts, doing some niche work with one of the other brands and so on. And then I went away from the bank, and later on they called me back 3 years later for a six-month engagement. So naturally I was curious to know where their traffic was. To my surprise, the traffic had tripled in 2.5 years, tripling the traffic. So I've often used this as my own case study that I tell other people, that when you get 100% acceptance of your recommendations, I've never had that subsequently. Once you're inside a company, you are no longer the expert. If you're a consultant, companies listen to you, they will follow everything you say, mostly. This bank did 100%, literally. Not a single objection from any developer, which you tend to get if you're inside a company. None of them said, well, how can I prioritize this? There was none of that. So that's the ideal situation that I would suggest, that don't do it only to consultants, but please also do it to your internal expert. They're not telling you to do something unless they believe in it. Ask them as many questions as you want and ask them to help you prioritize, but at least do everything they've asked for. Even if it gets put on the backlog for a little while, bring it out of the backlog and do it maybe next month or 3 months down the track. So I guess I hope that answers your question about how things were different there.
Definitely. I can relate to what you're saying, because I do. I am an advisor myself in different companies, different levels of companies and everything. And as an advisor, it's literally, I get everything implemented, I get 100% backing, you know. Now, if I was just in-house and had a job there, I'm not sure I'd get the same sort of level of implementation and backing, you know. So I can relate personally to what you're saying, but... But when you said you just come up with a 10% figure when you got asked that question, now that is probably one of the hardest things that the industry can determine. So, you know, when they're trying to get budget, okay, if I give you X amount, what are you going to give me back? And that's like you said, you come up with a 10% because it was safe, but it was actually astronomically more. So when SEOs are put in that position, what sort of mindset and decision-making and thought process should they go in to provide a realistic answer?
So in that particular bank, there was a subtask given to me, because most large companies have a quarterly focus on something. So the focus that quarter was credit cards, and they wanted the credit card part of their bank to perform well. And the rest of the marketing infrastructure of the bank was also supporting it. They were doing TV campaigns and so on. And so although I was doing SEO for the entire website, I had to make sure that I paid particular attention to credit cards. So I had very little to go on. Yes, there was Google Search Console, or its earlier incarnation of Google Webmaster Tools in those days, gave me some numbers. Google Analytics gave me some numbers. And then I could drill down to the traffic that the credit card portion of the website was getting. And I had to ask questions like, what is the value of one visit? It's a very valuable question that very few companies have been able to help me with. They all agree it's a great question, but no one's willing to do the calculations to say, what is the value of one visit? And at a very high level, you can say, well, if we get, say, 3 million visitors a month, and we make $1 million a month, therefore, you do the division and say, well, that's the value of one online visit. And you can use this figure to calculate. So if you need an increase of 10% in revenue, you also need to ask, okay, so what percentage of these visitors actually convert every month? And by drilling down these questions, you can come up with the variables that you need to arrive at whatever figure thereafter, whether they need to increase sales by 25%, then you create a spreadsheet where you just punch in the number and say, okay, well, if you need 25% more profit, then you need X number of visits. And if you need X number of visits, this is what I can try and do as an SEO. Now, I also say to them, well, don't stop your paid advertising just because SEOs come to the party. You'll also need them, the paid visitors, to play their role. An SEO will not take any credit for that, but I'm not suggesting you stop doing that. So really the answer is find out all the variables where you can get an answer, especially the value of one visit. And that number has come in useful many times. And often I've had to just take a guess and I say, okay, if you can't tell me, can I say $1 a visit? Is that a safe number? In an insurance company, the figure was a little more predictable because these were high value transactions. People were buying annual policies like home insurance for, say, $500, $1,000. They were larger sums. And therefore, the value of a visit was a bigger figure. It wasn't $1. I can't remember now, but could have been $10 per visit. And it could be $5 a visit. So you need to go and get these figures pretty early in the engagement. And then they begin to listen to you, because now suddenly you're speaking dollars or pounds. And then they're paying attention, because now suddenly they can, their mind's ticking over when they see 10% more traffic brings in X number of people. Therefore, they can reasonably expect so much more profit.
Well, this has been a super amazing chat with you today. Now, for people watching and listening to this, What sort of conversations, if any, would you like to have with people, and where can they find you?
Well, a good way is the book website. It's one of many ways to find me, because I'm in Google, like all good SEOs, easily found. It's accidentalseomanager.com, and there's a contact form on it. And if people want to find me on LinkedIn, again, I'm easy to find on LinkedIn. Send me a connection request, but please say something more than clicking the button. Just say that you heard me on this podcast, or you've read my book or something like that. And then we can connect on other platforms. Like, I'm on a few SEO Slack channels where a lot of engagement takes place. I'm on Slack channels that are not related to SEO, which I highly recommend that SEOs do, because your customers are not SEOs. They are most other occupations. So go and find other channels as well. But you'll find me on that book website.
Well, Ash, many thanks for your time today. It's been mind-blowing.
Thank you very much, Mark. It was great to be your guest.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.